The date is August 1st, 1997, and we're watching Spawn. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Al Simmons to my Terry Fitzgerald.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week we have brought back a guest who we mentioned this movie in a previous episode that we had with him, so we brought him back to talk about this one. Please welcome someone who is slowly becoming my new man crush, Mr. Aaron Knowles.
Oh, man, I'm honored.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crushes all around to both of you.
Love having you here. We couldn't wait to have you back to talk about Spawn. We dropped so many movie titles in that last episode, in the Dick Tracy episode you were in, and couldn't wait to have you back for another one.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, it's always an honor to come and you know, come over to your show and hang out with you guys. You guys are just two classy gentlemen, and I feel like I fit right in, so it's an honor to be here.
That's right. Co-host of the Oblivion Bar, so go check them out if you want, like, current shit, but we're here to talk about 1997 shit today. So this week, we're looking back at August 1997 when the movies in theaters were Good Burger, Air Force One, George of the Jungle, with Oscar winner Brendan Fraser starring in that one, Contact, and of course, our movie for today, Spawn, which earned $87.84 million on a $40 million budget.
Not bad, I guess. Yeah. To be honest, that's way better than I expected. So,
okay.
Is that considered a flop?
It doubled its budget. I don't know.
I guess if it doubles its budget, it's not a flop. Yeah. It's a success.
Yeah. Not like a raging success, I feel like,
it's not one of these, you know, $200 million blockbusters of today that when they flop hard. I mean,
it's like nobody needs to get fired over this.
Yeah.
One might call it a cult classic.
Yeah, maybe. But we're definitely not greenlighting the sequels you had planned. That's what it definitely
both of them
tells me. Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Well, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie spoiled for you,
like a pizza covered in maggots,
there you go. Then please hit pause. Go watch
like a
the
shovel
movie.
With a clown's face on it.
Yes, there you go. Go watch the movie and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, I found four this week. The first: the evil has a new enemy, the justice has a new weapon, and the world has a new hero.
Does he?
The justice.
And the evil. It does also say the evil has a new enemy. Yep. The evil has a new enemy. It's like Starfire on Teen Titans Go. The evil has a new the enemy.
Did the World Grammar Society take any issue with this?
The Society for the Protection of
Words,
of the English language and literature. Yeah. Spell. Yes. No. I. They didn't say anything about this one. I don't know.
Okay.
They're scared of Spawn. I don't know. Well, number two, Born in Darkness, Sworn to Justice.
That sounds like a Venom tagline, like Lethal Protector. Is that the next tagline? Yeah.
Well, the next one, From Flesh to Steel, From Blood to Blade, From Man to Spawn.
No, that sounds like a porn like tagline.
Flesh to Steel.
Blood to Blade, though, that's not the porn I want to watch, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the fourth one I didn't actually find anywhere, like, on the internet, but they must have missed this one, because this one's on my DVD, the special effects movie event of the year! !
Well, there is a lot of those.
Yeah. But none of these may be very good descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
All right, I think maybe I did better than Dick Tracy, so.
Nice.
Here we go.
Well, this did a little bit better than Dick Tracy. Let's be honest about story, a little less convoluted.
Okay. The devil is conspiring to trigger a series of events to unleash his armies on Earth. In order to do it, he requires one of Earth's deadliest killers. Enter Lieutenant Al Simmons, a United States Marine and CIA operative. After he's betrayed and murdered during an operation by his superior, Jason Wynn, Al returns 5 years later, crispier than a Big Crunch, with little memory of where he's been, and discovers his wife Wanda has married his best friend Terry, and Wynn is living large as a weapons developer. Al's only guide upon his return to Earth is a clown, the Violator, one of the Devil's generals. Violator explains to Al that he is now contractually obligated to lead the armies of Hell and kill Jason Wynn in exchange for his returning to Earth so that he could see his beloved Wanda again. Al is now dubbed Spawn and given a necroplasmic supersuit that can shoot chains conform to any specified need and comes equipped with a fancy cape. With his high-powered suit and some high-powered weaponry stolen from Wynn himself, Spawn sets off on his mission but comes to realize he's being played by Violator, who wants Wynn killed in order to release a biological weapon that will destroy the world. It's around this time that Cogliostro, an angelic Spawn, shows up to Yoda Al, teach him the ins and outs of spawning, and tries to convince him to embrace his new destiny, while he's more concerned about saving Wanda and her family who are being held hostage by Wynn. Spawn and Cogliostro save Wanda and company after defeating but not killing Wynn. Violator sends them to Hell, where they battle it out with the devil, Malbolgia, and the army of Hell before escaping back to Earth, where they go one more round with the clown and eventually detate his kappa from his head. In the end, like a true hero, Spawn realizes his love Wanda is better off without him, and he leaves her to her life while he stands watching the shadows, cape billowing into the night.
Nice. I love comics. I mean, only in comics do you get things like necroplasmic suits. That was a good word to throw in there, Colin.
Yeah. Necroplasm. Sounds dirty.
It does, yes. From flesh to steel. So, but before we start recording here, Aaron and I were talking a little bit about some of the things that are from my hometown of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, such as the fact that part of The Last of Us TV show was filmed here, and Nathan Fillion hails from here. You may or may not, if you know hockey at all, have heard of our NHL team, the Edmonton Oilers, as well. And they have a third jersey, which was the symbol was designed by Todd McFarlane.
Oh.
So there's another Edmonton connection with it. Just happened that we were talking other Edmonton stuff. But yeah, there is another Edmonton connection with Spawn and Todd McFarlane. Back when I was collecting comics in high school, I mean, it was the 90 to 97 era that I was collecting comics. And I remember how excited I was to start collecting Image comics, because with Image comics, you're starting in at the ground floor. It kind of felt like a Kickstarter. It felt like you were helping the little guy out when it came to Image. But they had glossy pages, which was so cool. At the time, you know, now everybody does glossy pages, but at that time, it's like glossy was kind of a big deal. And so I was into Spawn at the time. I collected Spawn, you know, the first 50 issues or so of Spawn, and really enjoyed him, and then was hugely disappointed when the movie came out, I remember. So I don't look back on this movie fondly. But I do look back at it as an adaptation of a character I enjoyed. And much like Dick Tracy, I always respected the fact that in most cases, they fucking went for it.
Yeah.
Especially when it came to, like, you know, John Leguizamo, you know. So, Aaron, now you were very excited to talk Spawn. So you were showing me some stuff before we officially start recording, and we're like, whoa, we got to pump the brakes on the Spawn talk until Colin gets here. So tell me, what is your history with Spawn?
Oh, man. I've been a huge fan of Spawn since, you know, mid 90s, the comics, the cartoon series on HBO. I remember I had to sneak downstairs later or when my parents weren't there to be able to watch it.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, you know, when Spawn, the movie came out in 97, it was, I think, I actually want to say that my dad was really excited because like around the mid 90s was when we actually started getting, you know, black leads in these superhero films. You know, yeah. You had Blank Man, which was, you know,
oh my God, Damon Wayans.
Yeah, the Wayans
shit,
brothers.
Yeah.
You had Meteor Man.
Meteor Man.
You had, which was one of my favorites. And then you had, right after Spawn came out, Blade. You had Steel.
Oh,
you know, and then Blade, yeah. So I don't know if we really refer to Steel as a superhero movie because it was that bad, but it was there, you know, it was there. But it was just, I think around that time, I think Spawn was really one of the first movies that my dad, like, that was like a violent movie that my dad really let me watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because he definitely would not let me watch the cartoon.
Yeah, oh yeah, okay.
But yeah, it was like, you know, around that time was when I really started seeing, you know,
and then fast forward like 30 years and or 25 years and you've got Invincible on TV, you know.
Absolutely. Like... Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. But I've been a huge fan of just this franchise, Todd McFarlane, for a long time. You know, I think I kind of fell away from, you know, this is one of those times for me where you really have to separate the artist from the art, cuz just I don't know if you guys know, but like Todd McFarlane is notorious for being kind of a dick. Like he's very egotistical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't say that personally because I don't know him and I would give him a chance. I'm a very tabula rasa, clean slate thing. But I just know that, you know, I tend to separate the artist from the art when it comes to some things like that and people's reputations. But I will give him a chance if you ever want to become friends. You know, yeah. Todd, if you're listening, which I know you are, how's it going, buddy?
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie was amazing. I cannot wait to talk about this movie. I've been so excited for this episode to talk to you guys about it because everything, John Leguizamo, Michael Jai White, Martin Sheen, right? Is it Martin Sheen or is it one of his other...
Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen.
There's so many Sheens now. They're like Baldwins. So I'm super pumped about this.
Well, okay. Well, first, Colin, let's hear from you and hear what kind of history you have with Spawn.
My history with Spawn is that, like, my mom, knowing that I was a superhero-loving kid, brought this movie home on VHS along with, like... I think like a VHS that was probably like the first couple episodes of the cartoon for me to watch.
Okay.
And like, I honestly
take from Aaron. I love it.
Like, I remember watching it and just being like, this is too scary for me. Like, I don't like it. It's too scary.
Mommy?
Because it's 1997, so I'd have been like 9, 10 probably when I was watching that, and it was
my son is 10 right now. He is such a special innocent child. Like,
well, he's a very kind
soul. So I can understand what it would be like if I were to show him Spawn. No.
Well, you also have to remember that
is a mistake.
That the other superhero movie I would have been watching around this time was like Batman Forever.
Yeah.
And like Mask of the Phantasm, and like, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, not like Batman. The animated series,
softer
stuff, yeah.
Softer stuff, yeah.
So yeah, I for the longest time had like I'd seen this movie, but I was just kind of like, I don't know, it's not really for me, and I wasn't very familiar with the comics either. I'd never read a Spawn comic until a couple weeks ago when I was like, you know what, I should just like check this out to have more stuff to talk about for this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many now.
Yeah, I started with like the classic, like just the first, the graphic novel that collected, I think, like the first 6 or 8 issues of like the Spawn, like proper. Because I think they've got to be like close to 500, if not more, at this point. But
and that's not even spinoffs either. I mean, they got like Gunslinger Spawn now, they got King Spawn. There's so much out there.
Yeah. I will say, like, on the comic side of things, I'm kind of like, I like comics history, and I was reading this, when did the Spawn comic would have come out, in what, like 93?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Yeah. And it's crazy to me how much, because I also haven't read much early Image, but how much the art style, you can tell that every artist today loved Image back in the day, and every writer, because that, like, I remember reading comics in the 90s and they still had like a lot of thought balloons and a lot of like narrative on the top, like Marvel and DC, and you can see in these Image comics, this was the start of like, it's just straight dialogue and pictures, and it just you read it and it plays out like a movie in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you know, that's how like modern comics are. It's crazy to me how, even though this comic is 30 years old, it reads as well as something that came out last Wednesday.
Yeah, like earlier comics, you don't have splash pages. You don't have, I mean.
The interesting thing about Spawn and Todd McFarlane was that we actually just interviewed Ryan Stegman on the show and on Oblivion Bar. And he was talking about him and like Ryan Stegman and Donnie Cates actually started their own, I'm not going to say publishing house, but like kind of comics brand. Mm-hmm. And it's called Kids Love Chains, KLC. And it's because they were so inspired by like Spawn and that whole era of like Image Comics and all the chains, you know, bursting out. So like one of their new comics is called Vanish. And Vanish is very, if you get a chance to read that, it's amazing. It's basically like Harry Potter meets Spawn.
Okay.
So it's you can tell the art style is very much like inspired by Tom McFarlane and his Spawn comics. But to go off of that even further is I absolutely agree with you, Colin. It's so funny how crazy there is such a difference in the art style, because the women, like the bodies were so like kind of like you're either really tall and skinny mm-hmm. or you're really like short and fat.
Yeah.
You know, you're if you're a woman, you probably have big boobs and you show a lot of skin. Yeah. You know, if you're a man, then you probably have like little prickles of hair somewhere and like, you know, warts and things like that. And it was so like that interesting, like, you know, just very, very specific
attention
style.
Detail,
yeah. You know. Even the way it's like set up as like, even like I feel 1993 Marvel is still very like square blocky panels. And in this mm-hmm. in Spawn, you start to see like the jagged, the like offset panels and like the big, like having the page itself be a panel with little panels on it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And different style. Like it was just
they,
cool.
They got into collaging.
I was like, oh man.
That's kind of what it is.
Well, kind of, but I was just like,
it's chaotic.
It made me wish that I could go back in time and like read Image and specifically Spawn, like when it came out, because I can see why that brand like blew up so much mm-hmm. because it just would have been so different from the time.
You had Savage Dragon, you had
I mean, you had the Max, you had Pit, you had Spawn, you had
Youngblood. Sport, that's young.
Oh yeah, Youngblood, Wildcats. Yeah, all those.
Wildcats, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Well, okay, let's jump into Spawn. Like we're jumping into a necroplasmic suit. Let's jump into Spawn. Directed by Mark A.Z. Dippe. I didn't say Zed. A.Z. Why not? I guess they did offer the directing position to Tim Burton and Alex Proyas. I don't know who Alex Proyas is. Produced by Clint Goldman and written by Todd McFarlane, who gets the comic book credit, and Alan B. McElroy and Mark A. Z. Dippe. And we open this movie on, well, I mean, any movie of this time is inspired by that Fincher-esque quality. Because like this whole opening is just such a drug trip.
Did you get the
opening credits with, you know, it's like 7 or 8 millimeter, those kind of movies that were
well,
out
I don't
at
know,
the time.
I haven't seen those, but it's exactly like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, it's intro.
It's the pilot to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's crazy.
This is where my shortcoming is that I haven't seen Buffy.
It's like I almost want to pull the dialogue up for whatever. I think it's only in the pilot that they give you the narration of the full like background story about the Slayer, but like it's almost the exact same as the opening narration for this. And then even when the techno like new metal music starts hitting, like it's so so much like the Buffy the Vampire Slayer theme.
I'm sorry. Yes, I did very much jump over like the cold open part of this movie. I'm sorry, because I was so excited to get to like the acid trip opening credits that are in this movie with block rock and beats, because I found the opening so frustrating because I kept waiting and waiting for the bass to drop and it never dropped.
It's the most odd like intro to a pseudo horror comedy.
But I mean, I'm sitting there waiting for, you know, back with them block rocking beats, right? And it's like, no, the bass never drops. And it's just like this, you know, nonstop tantric masturbation where you just never climax. It's so disappointing.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, before the credits roll, we have Al Simmons.
We do. Yes, we do have the cold doing open.
His first hit of the movie, which is some kind of, first off, none of it makes sense because this guy is like,
tear it apart. Okay, let's do this.
Okay. So the intro is a plane is landing at an airport. I don't remember where it said it was.
Oh, somewhere in Hong Kong, I think. But it's Hong Kong. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Hong Kong. Clearly not. But it's a plane landing on a runway. It's a small, little personal private jet, okay? And then we have Al Simmons, played by Michael Jai White, basically egress and attack this air tower, which for no reason, this doesn't make any sense. He could have clearly have – I'll get to the point. He climbs it. He basically kills everybody in the tower, okay? And then somehow – after climbing this tower, it sets up this multi-piece rocket launcher, okay, with a base. He actually attaches the rocket, puts it together, puts it on the base, and then puts a VR kind of like POV headset on, and it does this boop, boop, all powering up, lights up, and it's like targeting the people coming out of the plane, and then it launches this rocket that splits into like four different warheads, God knows why, and then blows up the entire plane anyways, okay? So to tear this apart, let me ask you this. A, did he climb the stairs with all that equipment? I'm just saying that's a lot of equipment. B?
Well, see, I mean, he destroyed all evidence of it. So we don't know whether there was some sort of pulley system that was evaporated as part of the... Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah. Skeechy, skeechy, skeechy. He got that up there and, you know... it was part of the destruction at the end, though. It was just kindling.
Yeah, I don't understand why he couldn't have fired that rocket from anywhere.
True. If it was that smart that it even, splits into four separate rockets and they're still smart enough to all hit the target. Maybe the four rockets is just in case they have defenses that can stop one of the rockets.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, those people, right? But those people seem like they were caught pretty unaware.
Yeah. Yeah,
you never know. He's Al Simmons. He's prepared for anything, including climbing multiple staircases to get to the top of a tower and kill again more innocent people, and then blow up the entire tower. Well, which therefore he probably killed a lot more people because there is no tower now to direct any of those planes in.
Well, yeah, maybe
they're all just circling.
That's true.
Circling, losing gas.
Die Hard 2. Yeah, but maybe that's why he blew everything up though. That was just his contingency plan. He's like, fuck this. I carried all this up. I'm not carrying this shit down, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck it. I'll just blow it up. They can send me the bill.
Yeah. And then I think it's after the credits. He actually he then goes after Jason Wynn, who is the boss of whatever organization that he's in charge of or that he works for.
Yeah.
And he's like, I didn't do this to kill innocents. Bro, you just blew up an entire tower of people who were innocent.
Yes. Yeah. Not to mention all the planes that may crash because there's no
exactly.
Tower. Yeah.
Like,
It's like, you know, the fact that in Clerks they argue that the stormtroopers were innocent bystanders because there were plumbers and carpenters on the Death Star when they blew it up.
Very true.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi is a much bigger travesty because there's more innocent civilians.
They just needed a job, man.
Yeah. I mean, the pilot showed up for work that day. He's like, fuck. I mean, I need the money. I've got my pregnant wife at home. You know, I need to pick up this extra shift. Sure, I'll fly this rich guy over to Hong Kong. I mean, I should be home with my pregnant wife, but no, we need the money. And, you know, he gets blowed up for his trouble.
I hope he had insurance.
Yeah. Sorry, sir, we don't cover missiles.
All of that together just proves within the first 5 minutes that there are that nothing makes sense in this movie, which is pretty much the standard going forward.
Yeah.
You know, you got Martin Sheen as Jason Wynn, who is just a complete asshole.
Now,
I
have to say, with Martin Sheen, I have trouble taking Martin Sheen seriously might be the best way to look at it, because I was never a West Wing watcher, so maybe I'd have a different perspective if I was a West Wing watcher. But with Martin Sheen, I just see his sons too much, because he is a very perfect, even mixture of Emilio Estevez and
Emilio!
Martin and Charlie Sheen. I mean, I have trouble taking him seriously in anything, because he talks like Charlie Sheen, but he kind of looks like Emilio Estevez. Like, it just, it fucks with my head.
He's also super turned up in this movie. Like, he's oh, playing, so. Like, stereotypical comic book.
He knows he's in a comic book movie.
Yeah, he did the part because he wanted to be in a comic book hero.
Exactly.
Movie. Yeah.
The mustache twirling villain.
Al Simmons. To your point, Aaron, about, like, the 5-minute mark in this movie, I wrote, and I just want to say this isn't indicative of my final thoughts on the movie, but when I first watched it, I wrote that 5 minutes in, and I'm thankful this movie is only 90 minutes long. But
I will say this about, no matter what, about how we proceed with this movie, whenever Spawn does come on, I can absolutely sit and watch the whole thing and lose myself in the whole movie. Yep. Like, that's it because, you know, going forward, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but there's so many small little details hidden in the movie. Yeah. That it's just it's great, and it does have a really star-studded cast.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I like, so. My one takeaway of this movie was how much I like Michael Jai White, and I'm shocked that he hasn't done more, like, mainstream things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's like a permanent B movie actor.
Like, why is it always Michael B. Jordan?
Like, I feel like he has a place in the MCU somewhere. But
true.
I don't know why. I was trying to, like, was it Spawn that kind of, like, I don't know, derailed his career? Because even in The Dark Knight, like, I like him a lot. I like him a lot as he plays Bronze Tiger in the like Arrow universe, yeah. and that kind of stuff. I don't know. He's a good actor, I think.
Mm. I mean, he might just have found his sweet spot in B movies. You know, yeah. He's just like, he's kind of. I think he's always, from what I've seen him act in, he's always been kind of the lesser known, like Steven Seagal, Van Damme, like Donnie Yen and all these, like, you know, martial artists, because he is a pretty renowned martial artist, but, like, he's just not an A-lister. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's probably found his sweet spot doing all of these, like, you know, interesting, like Black Dynamite. If you've ever seen Black Dynamite, that movie's fucking hilarious. Okay. It's so stupid. It's if you get a chance, watch Black. I mean, that might be one of the ones you need to do on the show, because it's that funny. And it's basically supposed to make fun of, you know, Dolomite and all those blaxploitation films.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's so funny. So I give that one a shot if you ever want to see Michael Jai White, like, take on a lead role that is hilarious.
Hmm. Yeah. The other thing I just want to mention is when I was looking up Martin Sheen's filmography, because I was wondering, like, what, I don't know, I see him as, like, a very serious, like, A-list actor. I don't know if that's
because he's Apocalypse Now
necessarily
guy. That's
true.
Why.
But
that was his early career. Yeah.
But in his filmography, I saw that he voiced Sly Sludge in Captain Planet, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Of all the shit that Martin Sheen has done in his lifetime, you're like, yeah.
I'd rank that as my favorite thing about him after birthing. Well, not birthing, but conceiving Emilio Estevez, Gordon Bombay for life.
Yeah, yeah. What about the other one?
No.
No, no tiger blood for you.
Pass on Charlie Sheen.
I forgot how much pre-Spawn stuff was in this movie. Actually, when it came down to watching it, because I forgot about the whole setup from Jason Wynn, even, like, because we have the opening scene with the assassination, and then the credits where the bass never drops, and then we have, you know, the scam that he's got, you know, when he goes to see Martin Sheen for the first time. I have to think that a scanner, like, that can go through car and, like, all the way down to the skeleton at the security checkpoint, that's got to be something that's just pumping them full of cancer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way that this is a safe thing to be using at a security checkpoint.
Well, that's the price of security, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to the company. Yeah. You're getting cancer.
But, of course, we get the best trope that's ever in any of these kind of movies where, you know, he gets sucked in for one last job. He's gone there to quit. But, yeah, he gets sucked in for one last job. And, of course, that's one that's going to go horribly wrong. So, in the comics, Fitzgerald, his buddy Fitzgerald, is black, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. Okay.
They changed that. Well, I read somewhere in my readings that they changed that because they didn't want the viewers to get confused that this was a black movie. So they wanted to make sure that, you know, it wasn't going to be perceived as a black guy film.
Well, it wasn't like it was Tyler Perry's Spawn. I mean,
well, I mean, and to be honest, there are a lot of people of, you know, persons of color, as far as the leading, you know, you got John Leguizamo, who's Hispanic, yeah. You know, Teresa Randall, who plays Wanda, Michael Jai, or Al Simmons' wife.
Oh, yeah, and of course, she plays...
Or is it his girlfriend, because why wouldn't she have his last name?
Yeah, well, she's Marcus's wife in Bad Boys, too.
Yes, yeah. She is.
Yeah. Makes a career of being the lead's wife.
Damn. Always the lead's wife, never the lead.
No, and for 1997, that is definitely very cool, is that it is unconventional for the time, I suppose. So, I mean, that is fantastic, but I mean, yeah, that is kind of a stupid reason to change the lead character. Of course, we heard the same thing with women, with Mr. Mom a few weeks ago, where there one lady dyed her hair because she didn't want to be confused with the lead, because that would be two blonde ladies in a movie.
Oh, no.
So don't want to target the wrong demographic with all blonde ladies.
So interesting enough about, I was going to say, about the facility that Al Simmons has to, like, so the final job that Jason Wynn gives Al Simmons. All right,
okay,
he's got to go.
Now, the facility that they work at, or the one in North Korea?
The one in North... Yes, the one in North Korea.
Okay. So we're going to North Korea. Right on.
Beautiful so
this time of year.
It's the traveling is just, you know, it's so
I know.
They're so receptive to tourists.
I mean, yeah. My God. You haven't had a Mai Tai until you've had North Korean Mai Tai. Mai Tai. Yeah.
It's just an empty cup. We don't have anything. So Al Simmons has to go and blow up this chemical factory. Or destroy this chemical factory. Okay, yeah. So he gets he kung fus his way into this chemical factory. God knows why. Like, nobody has shot or nobody has screamed that there's an intruder. No alarm has gone off. Nothing's been set, and it's just like a random bunch of dudes who are guarding this insane chemical making weapons plant.
Yeah,
and then as soon as he gets to the actual, like, okay, first off. We're talking a huge, like, oil industry looking like place. This isn't even like a lab.
Aaron's heated. He's up. Okay. He's pacing around.
I wish I could walk around and, like, just grab my mic and be like, "This is bullshit. This is bullshit." But he like, you know, he's walking around and he's basically, like, you know, jump kicking people, and there's not a sound. Nobody's being alerted.
As you do.
First,
yeah.
As, yeah, and then he makes it to, I guess, the main chemical making area. Mm-hmm. Or main chemical holding area, which there's no more guards, and he's looking in, there's explosives that have already been set.
Yeah.
What was he planning on doing? Because he sees the explosives, Jason Wynn walks in, he's like, "What the hell, Jason?" And he's like, "If you blow this place up, it's gonna, like, send all the chemicals into the nearby villages." Ow, yeah, what the hell were you gonna do?
Yeah, what was his job?
What was your plan?
Yeah, his mission was to go blow it up, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So once again, it's like maybe he had, like, a different type of explosive. Maybe he had something else. I mean, who knows?
Maybe he was just gonna flick the big switch that said off.
That. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Flush.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just flush,
like,
all
the gas valve on my furnace. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, whoa, okay, we're safe. Yeah.
He's gonna hit that toggle that goes deadly. Benign.
Yeah, that's, you know? Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Safe.
Safe.
So and then so we got, you know, Jason. But also we have this stunning
Melinda Clark,
who plays Jessica Priest, who's there as well.
Yes,
who is I'm assuming just Jason Wynn's, for lack of a better term, lapdog,
arm candy.
Who nobody's mad at her for being arm candy.
Yeah, she. I mean, she is also like his protection too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, not just arm candy.
But, yes, she's arm candy with a purpose.
Yes.
But and she, oh my God, like she just, first off, okay, he's supposed to be like the number one assassin in the world, like one of the most kills under his belt. That's why he's being,
he's the best.
You know, recruited by Hell. He is the best. And yet he gets taken out by the Help.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, like Al, stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah.
I mean, like he does not know how to handle being lit on fire. He might have still got out of there if he wasn't panicking about being on fire. God.
I mean, I feel like I agree with your point about his skills. Like, I wish this movie would have done a little more to kind of show you, like, how much of a badass he is. Because really, it's like, yeah, he shows up in the first one, he blows something up from far away with a rocket launcher. But if he's such a, like, you know, good kill, and you have Michael Jai White, this, like, amazing martial artist, why wouldn't you do something more where, like I want to see him like a pseudo like The Raid, where this guy, where he just like goes up a tower, kills everybody, and escapes.
Yeah,
I felt the same when he shows up as Spawn to kill Wynn in that party. Like, I guess he's out for revenge, but I'm still like, you're a tactical assassin. Would you not have planned things a little bit better than just jumping through the center glass into the room and trying to kill everyone? Like,
the most vulnerable position in the room, you're just going to drop in and leave yourself open to whatever security's team was supposed to be there, because apparently you have a bunch of like UN people and warlords in the same room, and somebody can just jump in from the roof and grab Jason Wynn, and there's not a single gun besides Priest.
Yeah,
you know,
and especially when he doesn't even realize at that point that he's invulnerable, like he doesn't.
We're jumping way ahead, though. So... we're jumping.
Whatever.
You're right.
We don't mind rambling.
Okay, yeah. Colin, I absolutely appreciate what you just said, because one thing. Okay, I'm gonna jump a few years in the future to another superhero movie, Man of Steel. Okay, Henry Cavill's Superman.
Okay.
Michael, what was it? Michael. What's his name?
Michael Shannon.
Shannon as General Zod. Yeah. Okay. One of the best things, one of the coolest things that I don't think people gave enough credit to this movie was because the pure discipline of Michael Shannon's General Zod, from the moment that he realizes that he's getting, like, his suit gets ripped off and he starts realizing he's absorbing the energy from the sun, like learning, and he just like in the moment, he is so disciplined that he learns to fly and his laser vision, like within moments, where it takes Superman years of his life to master these things. Like that shows how disciplined that man or that being was. Now, I feel like with your point, which was exactly what it should have been, if you're that deadly of a killer, like, you know, your weapons, you know, your abilities, you know, your body, like, you take time to figure out what you have and what you're capable of.
Yeah.
So he should have been, instead of his, we'll talk about it, but there's like a moment where it's like, okay, he's going to kill Wanda, but let's go have a good montage on how to use my suit's abilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, it's like, that's like in the beginning, like once he figured out that he had a suit, I feel like he should have been like, not just like, okay, punching things or like whatever. He should have been like out there, like figuring out what this suit could do, you know? And I think that's a very much lacking part of this movie. If there is, you know, if I can say one thing that is lacking, it's that.
Yeah. Well, and this movie opens with all this stuff showing how great of a, you know, soldier he is. The comic itself opened with more of a "Who am I? I don't know who I am" kind of vibe. Like, I remember that was one of my disappointments when I watched this back in the day, is I kind of wanted more of that Crow opening of, you know, the mystery around it. And I think this movie is so disjointed at places, it would be more fun to be learning this stuff in form of memories coming back. Like, lean into that if you're going to make no sense. If you're going to contradict something like blowing up a chemical plant, in one scene right there. I mean, why not just lean into the fact that, yeah, okay, why not make it more of a remembering who you are?
Well, I think
that's a very valid point.
Yeah, I think too, and there's, I watched an interview with Michael Jai White where he kind of expressed his disappointment about this, but like, this whole story is really about a man who like loves his wife so much that he's willing to like lead an army for hell to come back, yep, to her. But yeah, you don't even meet
that,
Wanda.
That old chestnut.
You don't even meet Wanda until like he's back already. Like there's no, they don't, yeah, lay any groundwork showing their loving relationship and how good of a husband
That's
he
true.
Was
yeah,
to her,
you see the
and how much
before
they love each other,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. And like,
yeah,
I never really buy into his reason for what he's doing. Really, yeah, like it's kind of like everything is cool, like
Stalker.
Everything looks cool and it's a fun movie, but like the actual motivation is hard to like really get on board.
Well, there's
with.
These
to really, yeah,
there's these odd
that.
Flashbacks like that happen throughout the movie, and it's like the dialogue that's going between Al and Wanda, it sounds like it's straight out of a daytime soap opera.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I will always love you. I will be back for you. You
I
know,
will
it's
always
like,
be in your heart.
Yes. Yeah,
but yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure that they alluded to it, but they never really fully explained it, that Cyan is his daughter.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
See, because that I know that I wasn't point, sure about. I
yeah.
I was trying
they,
to
well,
line
the part
it
where
up,
Fitz but... is like, you know, where Fitz, you know, talks to Al when he first like sees that Al's back, he's like, basically, you betrayed me. You got with Wanda. She was heartbroken. She was falling apart. Do you know about Cyan? Mm-hmm. But they never explore that anymore. I think that was going to be the point where it's like, Cyan's your daughter, you know?
Yeah. As well, to your point, Sean, about the comics and how the comics start, I agree. I liked that aspect a lot more as well, where it's like he's kind of more in the dark about mm-hmm. even who he is. Yeah. And I also like that, like, right away he kind of starts acting, I don't know, like, almost like Ghost Rider-ish. Like, he's like a spirit of yeah. vengeance. Like, one of my favorite ones was there's an issue where this, like, pedophile killer, like, gets let out of jail. And it was, like, a guy that Al was supposed to have assassinated on behalf of, like, this guy killed this person's kid and basically hires Al to kill the pedophile. But the cops got to him first, and so now that he gets released, Spawn goes back and, like, murders him after he's already, like, the guy's murdered a bunch of kids. But I would have liked to see more of that aspect in the comic. I don't know, like...
More Crow-like.
I guess...
Well, that's a generational thing also, because, yeah. you know, I think at this time, when in 97, when this movie came out, you know, this was, again, like, much like the non-beat-dropping... You know, intro, we wanted these action sequences. We wanted to get straight to the point. We wanted to, you know, and I think that's one of the things also
I guess it was edgy for its time, too.
Yeah. You couldn't necessarily have that emotional, like the Crow had already kind of been doing its thing. It was more of that like emo kind of level headed still with some rock music. Yeah. But then you got like this couldn't do the same thing where it's like, well, let's talk about our memories. Let's do everything based off of flashbacks, because I could see how they were trying to kind of put it in there. But what they really did was end up overbearingly like handhold the audience by putting Cagliostro
yeah,
as like his Yoda-esque character.
I didn't like the narration. Like the Cagliostro like narration at all.
Yeah.
That kind of took me off.
I was a Hellspawn too. I made my choice.
My God, that man looks like Jeffrey Rush though.
Yeah.
He that's who he reminded me so much of.
And that was the other thing is like they don't really talk about like I think that one thing would have been cool to kind of like throw into this movie was the fact that yes, we see the forces of hell. We see Malbogia, we see the other okay, first off, every single other CGI-created character in Hell looked exactly like a Spawn anyways.
Well, can we talk about Hell for a second? Because I don't remember... I don't know if you remember back in the day when you would have things like the dancing baby and the flying
oh God,
toasters
yes.
and everything like that. In Hell, all the other Spawns in Hell, it just looks like one of those dancing baby-type programs.
Oh, yeah.
Hell... Like,
cut and paste.
Yeah, so much of this movie was so good, but my God, Hell was terrible.
Don't watch a hell scene from Spawn if you have any kind of like seizure disorder, if you have epilepsy, because you will regret it.
Yeah. But it's just the hell animation from South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut was better than the
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey had better hell scenes.
There you go. Absolutely. It sure as hell did. But anyway, I interrupted you.
I think they could have raised the stakes on that if it is, in fact, like a heaven versus hell type situation of like, you don't really get to see much of the other side. And
that's my point. Yeah. That's exactly my point. It's like it would have been really cool to have seen some kind of like, even if it was like a post-credit scene, even if it was towards like the end. Or hell, we know that Cagliostro used to be a Spawn and he chose to fight for the other side. Why didn't they bring any kind of like other
Angel
side,
Army?
You know, Angel Army influence on into the scene. At least talk about it. But don't no. It was only based on everything that we saw from the Hell side, and I think that's right there would have been something that would definitely up the ante a little bit in this film.
Yeah.
Okay, now one thing I want to know. I mean, maybe I don't remember the comics well enough, or it wasn't explained in the movie. But what is this alley? Like, is this alley somewhere that is like magical? Is it like a purgatory that he gets to hang out? Why is this alley? Yeah, it's a Diagon Alley. Why is this alley so special for people that are cast out of society?
So I think that from what I can remember, and Colin, you can, you know, if you know the answer, since you've been reading the comics more recently, from what I understand, this alley area is basically like a almost, what do you call it? When churches and
like
cemeteries,
like a sacred,
they're
like hallowed ground.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, like hallowed ground, because basically it's almost like a church. It's a sacred place. And so
the forces of evil cannot cross the threshold or something. Of this
it's supposed to be basically be like, because if you look at where he is, where his little like hidey hole is for his stash of guns, that roof is the roof of a church.
Mm, right. Okay. Yeah.
So it's supposed to be, it's like holy ground. And I don't think that they're supposed to be able to fight there. I think it's supposed to be like, you know, like if you ever watch Highlander, they weren't allowed to fight on holy ground. God knows why.
Oh, God but, does know why.
Yeah. God knows why. Exactly. but so for me, that's what I understood that alleyway to be is basically like the church-esque type of place. And that's why he was like there and lost, because from just like I believe in the comic, he, you know, or even the cartoon, he's got to discover his own like identity and past and make his own choice. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
Was he was supposed to make his own choice to, you know, once he had no memory, to be that side of heaven or hell.
Yeah. They kind of allude to that in the movie, but not as well as I would have liked that, because even at one point, like Mal Bolger says, like, he needs to choose, and then the Cagliostro, whatever his name, Casanova, he keeps saying, like, you know, like, it's that's the other theme of this. It's like, I think part of it, the story was really about this choice between the forces of good or the forces of evil, but it all kind of like gets lost in the wash.
See, if the main character was trying to figure it out for himself too, at least you wouldn't feel as confused as the audience, because you'd be like, well, Spawn doesn't get it either. So let's learn together.
For a master soldier and a master strategist, he is very easily played by like the very few people that are in this movie. Mm-hmm. All right. Like, you know, you got Mal Bolger, you got the Violator. You got Jason Wynn all kind of playing him as a puppet and like putting them against each of them. And all he's got to do is figure it's take a moment to think about it and realize, oh, they're using me to kill Wynn to start the, you know, the end of the world.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do that. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that one of the main reasons that I love this movie so much is John Leguizamo.
Oh, I was just going to say, you just mentioned the Violator. Yeah, let's talk John Leguizamo. I mean, he is something. I mean, you know, I've always wondered, like, did he do this movie because Danny DeVito said no? But I mean, he is incredible in this movie, and
he stole it.
And to think about the fact that, like, just think about crab walking around like that for as many hours as he had to do with this movie. Good on him, right? And really, like, isn't this the movie that made him? Like, strangely, for Michael Jai White, it kind of broke him. But for John Leguizamo, it's like all of a sudden he was somebody because of this movie.
Yes. I mean, he was already
this is
doing
his
stand-up.
Mandalorian.
And like, yeah, he was doing stand-up. He had a couple of movies beforehand, one of them being The Pest, if you ever saw The Pest.
I was going to say The Pest, yeah.
Oh, my God, love that movie.
I forgot that was before.
But, yeah, this was really his kind of, like, his moment of discovery. And he's been in a lot of stuff also after, like, you know, like was it the Dawn of the Dead? Romeo and Juliet. Like, a lot of really good stuff. But, yeah, he killed it in this movie, like, figuratively and literally. No, not literally, but definitely figuratively in multiple ways. And he's, you know, the S to the P to the A to the on. Go Spawny. Go Spawny. You know, and he does his little dance in the cheerleader outfit. It was amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if fudge packing midget is a term that plays well in 2023, though.
Definitely not.
He definitely threw a few of those out where it's like, ooh, I mean, that really shows you're evil because I wouldn't want to be saying those things anymore. Well, I guess I just did. Shit. But, you know... Like, I was quoting.
E.D. Dead. I still use that line to this day.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's... He was so good as Clown, who, a.k.a. the Violator.
Incredible, yeah.
And there's, like, one scene that I know that was really, really cool was... We talked about earlier was the maggots or the wax worms that were on the pizza that he pulls out of the garbage can.
Yeah.
He actually ate that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's kind of funny because when you watch that, it's like you can see the exact moment that they cut, and he was probably spitting it out, right? Like it's
probably vomiting.
Yeah,
but yeah, but I would say like he was his character. So the clown who changes into the Violator, who's this big like almost like scorpionish like clawed phase creature.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, who I think has like four or five brothers in hell that are all like the Violator, the Vindicator. The whatever, there's like they're all V's.
The Vibrator.
Yeah, he is a lieutenant of hell, and Spawn is supposed to be a general of hell. So it's funny because he actually talks about it in the movie where he wanted to don the Spawn armor, but he just wasn't worthy in Malbosia's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be interesting. I don't remember. I don't think I ever got to a point in the comic where he got Spawn armor. I'm sure it's probably happened. It would be interesting to read, but yeah, I definitely think that his character was, I don't want to call him, because Malbosia didn't really have an antagonistic like portion of this movie. It was mostly Jason Wynn and Clown.
Yeah.
Right. So I'd be safe to call him kind of the villain, the main villain of the film.
Yeah. He comes across more as like the architect of the plan. I was going to say before that I feel like the movie, anytime he's on screen, he's furthering the story by, like, hand-feeding the audience. Oh, like, this is all the twists and turns I've concocted, and these are how I'm setting everybody up to betray each other and all this stuff.
But at least he's entertaining.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, like, it's not just an exposition dump. It's like, hey, look at the things that I'm going to do and all the jokes I'm going to make and everything like that. I mean, yeah.
Whereas you have Jason Wynn, who, again, is in charge of this, like, CIA-type organization that apparently only employs, like, five people.
Yeah, A6 at headquarters, right? So A6 is for the amount of people that work there.
Yeah, there's six people. Except for the dumbass guards who, like, you know, can't stop him from breaking into the armory.
Yeah.
But that, again, he is, like, there's that one point where the clown is talking to Jason Wynn. He's like, that's why we're gonna put this heart monitor in your chest. And he's like, Martin Sheen gets these like squinty eyes. He's like, that's smart. I like that. That's good thinking. It's like, no, it's not.
That's so stupid. Like, that's the dumbest thing you could do.
Yeah.
Let's put something in my chest so that he doesn't kill me.
I mean, well, see, and you're putting something in your chest. So that means that no matter what happens at some point in the future, the planet is going to die when you do.
Exactly.
Like, you're just ensuring the fact, you know, global extinction as soon as you die. Well, if I'm dead, everyone else is going to die because...
Slips in the shower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gets hit by a bus.
That part of it kind of, like, just blew by me the first couple times I watched it. But the last time I was, like... Again, to your point, like, Al kind of doesn't act how you'd expect for, like, his skill set and his knowledge. But with Jason... At this point, you have to be like, why? Like, what did he think was the plan. He knows what the plan is. Like, he straight up knows that Violator and Hell brought back Al. And even if he doesn't necessarily but I feel like he would have to clue in that, you know, they kind of want him to kill him. Mm-hmm. And they want, like, so I don't understand why he thinks, like, putting the dead man's switch in his heart would be some sort of insurance against the plans of Hell.
It doesn't. It's like he's got all these cool computers, but he's over in the corner, like, planning things out with, like, a pushpin board. A pushpin's a cork board and some yarn. Like, that's he's not leading this organization really the way. And then he's, like, on the news and all this.
The minute he dies, Hell wins, no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was the whole point. Like, they know that they want to fuel Hell's army and bring Hell to Earth to storm the gates of Heaven, which we never see Heaven again. We never see any of their forces. Like, what did you think was going to happen, Jason? You master, like, intelligence guy?
Yeah.
You know?
No bunker you're going to be able to hide in.
Yeah. And then you got a guy with, like, a superpowered devil hell suit, necroplasmic goo, you know, that's coming after you with everything that he's got. So...
Well, okay, I want to talk the suit, because now, if there is one place where you know they spent the money on these effects, it is this fucking suit. My God, is it cool? But I have to say, Michael Jai White looked so uncomfortable with his burn makeup. Like, it's like a Batman cowl on his head. I don't think he can turn his head.
Mm-mm. He just looks like the only thing he can move is his eyes and his mouth, and he's just talking, and that's it.
Yeah.
Barely.
But the suit is incredibly cool, and, like, the cape is its own thing and all that sort of stuff.
So it looked like the entire movie, the cape was CGI, but the suit was practical effects, which was really awesome. For the most part, it was practical effects.
For the most part, yeah. But even when it morphed, like when the mask came on, it was still a pretty slick effect. Like, it looked like... You know, the quality of Venom.
Yes.
You know, like...
That's what I'll say. It's like, a lot of this movie, the practical effects that occurred with the Spawn suit and some of the other things, even the Violator, like, when he was, like real size and kind of, like, grabbing stuff, was very well done when it came to practical effects. A lot of the CGI graphics, obviously, this was mid to late 90s, not the greatest, but not terrible.
Hell was the only one I couldn't get behind. I just couldn't get behind Hell. It's like they ran out of money when it came to Hell.
They did that on PowerPoint.
Yeah.
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 I don't know. The VFX was done by, like, the guys who did Jurassic Park.
Okay.
So I am, like, a little bit disappointed. But...
Well, the suit shit is cool. The suit shit and the cape shit, man.
I want to be there with you guys, but, like, I'm kind of like the cape. I thought the cape kind of looked, and to me, like, the cape for Spawn is iconic. Like, knowing nothing about that character, every image I've ever seen of him is with that sweeping cool cape and like the
Doctor Strange.
Yeah,
color,
I was gonna say it's very Doctor Strange. Even the way it saves him after the ball, there, it just kind of takes him off and saves his life. But
I wanted to take a second while you were talking. I wanted to look this up because I wanted to actually talk about Spawn and his abilities.
Okay,
from like comic and movie, and so some fun facts about Spawn was that Spawn has a multitude of special powers that include but are not limited to super strength, agility, teleporting.
Oh,
okay. Blasts necroplasm from his fingertips, full regeneration of limbs and organs. Apparently, he can stop time.
Okay.
He can breathe fire, he can reanimate the dead, and the list continues.
Wow.
That's quite
a list.
Yeah. I mean, prior to reading the comic, my only knowledge of Spawn was through art that I'd seen and action figures I'd seen in stores, and I always just assumed he was like some sort of killing machine, like... Just loaded with, like, I would have thought guns were a big part of his deal.
Yeah, kind of a Deadpool-esque.
Yeah. Like, I do like the practical suit. I think it's, like, it kind of, like, looks cheesy sometimes, but it's pretty cool for the time that it came out. I just wish that he would have had a practical cape on the suit more, but I think the reason why they didn't do it was because it probably would have looked super hokey.
It probably would have, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so, to bring up like Doctor Strange again, I mean, the stuff that they can do with his cape to make it always look like it's fluttering and shit. I mean, that's the kind of thing you would have needed. It needs to always be in motion for this character, and you're right. Yeah.
So from what I know, his cape is actually like its own entity.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, I believe that his cape actually feeds on that's like part of its power is like it can heal him as well by feeding on like flesh and bone. But other facts that I'm seeing is that the suit is actually alive and it's a symbiotic relationship. So it's a lot like a Venom suit, like you were saying.
Okay.
The cape is weaponized, the evil within. So he also is very much like Ghost Rider. He can absorb the sins of others and cleanse their soul.
So what I'm really hearing here is Spawn is a dozen of your favorite superheroes all rolled into one is what's going on here. You know, he's part Venom, I mean, he's like, part Ghost Rider, he's part, you know, like,
but that's like
part
the
Doctor
image,
Strange.
That's like the image, model. Image, like, hallmark.
Yeah.
Is like half the early, like, those early superhero comics, they're like reimaginings of Marvel and DC characters, or just like pseudo like not the amalgam comics, but almost like versions of them, like mixed together. Like, wouldn't it be cool if this? Like,
you're always going to have that too, I guess. I mean, you have Adam and you have Ant-Man, or you have Superman, you have Homelander. I mean, you're always going to be ripping off characters no matter what, I guess. Yeah. But, like, I like how many are mixed into Spawn, though. It's, like, the fact that, you know, we just came up with five that are all mixed into Spawn.
We also have to remember, like Todd McFarlane created Spawn when he was a comics-reading kid.
True.
So, like, I'm sure...
I mean, you know, even Stan Lee did it. You know, a lot of these guys, they took things that they knew, or, you know, supposedly Stan Lee even stole straight up people's desks. But, you know, that's what they do. They create, you know, amalgamation of or pastiches of their favorite heroes. And, you know, like Deadpool and from Marvel and Deathstroke from DC, you know, it's like it's mirror images of each other with slight changes, you know, in personality. And I think one thing that I really liked about, again, I said it earlier, was in this movie, there are so many like different like moments where you see like Easter eggs, like you talked about the part where Al and Spawn crashes through the ceiling. There's a point where you see this woman who's wearing the same earrings and like a Spawn kind of green and black or green and white dress at the at the ball. And so I guess she has the same earrings as Angela, who is actually one of the angels from Heaven's forces. So maybe that was like them saying like Heaven is watching. You know, or Heaven is involved, since she was so, you know, like a kind of a maybe that was supposed to be like her.
It's so funny. I wanted to point out that woman, but I was like, they're not gonna get this. But I was like, her dress, I was like, why is she wearing a green Power Rangers dress? Like, it was weird.
What was Spaz in the comics?
I don't remember.
That I don't recall. No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
From what I saw in the comics, like, there's kind of the point where he goes, oh, no, in the, that's the thing. In the comics, he realizes that the suit can, like, morph. So, like, he uses the suit to basically be somebody else. And then he goes to their house as, like, a repairman or something. And that's how he finds out about how her life has been and all that.
Yeah, so, that's what I was going to say is I'm pretty sure he in because like you were saying, the show and the comic were more of a memory based kind of like plot progression. Yeah. Whereas in the comic and the show, he is very much on his own path. Like, he's not as obsessed with his previous life. He's trying to find a way forward. It's like RoboCop, you know, in RoboCop 1 and 2, he's constantly trying to like, oh, I am, you know, Officer Murphy, or I'm not Officer Murphy. You know, it's like, pick one or the other. You're either going to be Hellspawn and not Al Simmons, or you're going to be Al Simmons and not and try and do both, you know. But I think that's because we get to see a little bit more consistency in the show and the comic of him actually being Hellspawn versus that, like, oh, I want to be with Wanda, you know, type stuff.
I'm going to creep in the backyard like the Phantom of the Opera or something.
Ooh.
But hey, good on those parents for teaching that kid that even someone that looks like Spawn, it could just be a nice guy.
Yes. You know, and now, to hire clowns that looked like that.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, my God.
For a kid's birthday party.
Yeah, like, what? Did they audition him? Like,
yeah.
Maybe you should have watched an audition video or something of this guy before he came in. Jeez. He's like sitting there smoking cigars the whole time and everything.
Oh my God, it was terrible. But that's what you get when you work for a megalomaniac.
Yeah. When Priest gets killed, I was thinking, man, for someone that took a gunshot wound to the head, she's still looking pretty good. they didn't go for it, you know? They didn't blow her brains out or anything.
No, not at all. No. Not at all. She And then they just wheel her out on a nice, like, you know, into the ambulance. And it's like nobody even bat an eye, really.
Mm-hmm. What was Clown's overall, like, goal?
He's the architect.
Like, he's working both sides. I mean, he's working with Jason and he's working with Spawn.
He's not working with anybody. He's manipulating them all.
Yeah. Yeah, like, his overall goal was to get Wynn to make the weapon, sacrifice Al, and then turn Al against Wynn, who has the weapon, to release the weapon. Like, all of it, again, was on... That was it. That's the choice that we were kind of referring to
but
earlier.
Why is the devil all getting pissed off at him for it, though? That's, like...
I think because at one point he was trying to, like...
He was wasting time.
He was taking too long. Okay. And I think it was also like he was trying to, it had to be Al's choice to kill Wynn. And I think he was trying to like force him. He wanted to like force him to do it.
Okay.
The whole thing was, again, he had to make Al angry enough at the world and lose his humanity to kill Jason Wynn and make that choice to kill pretty much the rest of humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, like, to look at the fine print is the choice. Oh. So, like, the fine print on the contract is, like, it's not enough that, like, Al just, like, maybe he kills Wynn, like, because he's being coerced to do it, or, like, he has to, like, choose of his own free will to do it, and then that will seal his soul for hell.
Did he kill... Oh, I was going to say he killed Priest. I was going to ask if he killed anybody else, you know, because, like, that's the weird thing is... The choice, one would think that the choice was to make the deal to lead Hell's Army.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
To me, that was the choice. Choice was made, but apparently the choice was to kill the world.
I guess, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But to me, it seems like also if you're murdered, then you're not necessarily being killed to go to hell. So is he trying to power up Heaven's Army or is he trying to power up Hell's Army?
Well, that's the other thing. Is like, is Al a noble killer?
I mean,
or
he could
be. Like, why was it so certain
that
he was going to
hell? We already talked about innocent bystanders.
Yeah.
Guess, yeah.
Well, okay. So with Cogliano or whatever his name is,
Cogliostro.
Cogliostro. Why does he help Spawn then? Like, is this like you know some girlfriend that thinks she can change him, or
well,
is
I think,
this?
Oh, so well, it says right here, Wynn has made a deal with the clown, too, and is supposed to destroy the world with a deadly virus that will help start Armageddon and allow hell to attack heaven. So apparently Armageddon is the way for hell to attack the gates of heaven.
Okay.
Yeah. Cogliostro's part in it is like it seems to me, I'm just guessing, but it seems to me like he was in the same shoes as Spawn, but chose the good side because it's like, even if you... It's redemption. It's like you can... He mentions like he was an old school medieval assassin as well. But it's like basically even after death, you can still choose to do good type thing.
Well, fat load of good he's been doing. Nobody even heard of him.
Can't even pronounce his name.
Yeah. Why don't you pick a... Well, apparently Cogliostro throughout history was also known as Merlin.
Hmm.
So we tie it into something we understand.
Yes. So he's been around for a long time. which is I mean, I think it's interesting.
So
but
we're retconning that Merlin was an assassin for King Arthur.
Yes, or he was a hellspawn.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. And then, to the one of the first lines in the movie is the battle between heaven and hell has waged eternal. There are armies fueled by souls harvested on Earth. The devil Malborgia has sent a lieutenant to Earth to recruit men who will turn the world into a place of death in exchange for wealth and power. Yeah, there we go. That pretty much explains it, right?
That, exactly. Yeah.
Then,
I know at one point when the clown turns into the Violator, which was also kind of a cool transformation. But he's threatening to kill Spaz. You know, you got to be careful because that's the origin story of John Wick.
Oh.
You know.
But instead we have Al Simmons.
Yeah.
Parabellum.
Stealing a motorcycle.
That was pretty cool. That was actually one of my most favorite parts of this movie was the motorcycle scene where he's like, again, right before the motorcycle scene, we see this moment where it's like the clown, a.k.a. Violator attacks the alleyway, okay, and basically almost kills Spawn almost kills Spawn, and then it's like says, okay, Spawn, you know, I'm headed to Wanda's, meet me there, or she's dead.
Yeah,
and from there,
training montage.
From there, we get a training montage with Cogliostro and the kid, and it's like, don't you have somewhere to be? Like, instead we're throwing and then like the whole thing is like he's going to, okay, so here's the stupid thing, he goes into his
here's
little
the stupid thing,
yeah.
okay
he yeah, here's another stupid thing, he goes to his little you know, hidey hole and pulls out a bunch of guns and he's yeah. like, you don't need those, your suit is a weapon, and so he puts the guns down, he teaches him to use his claw chains, okay, and then they just, he's like, okay, I think I'm ready. After one little lesson of throwing a bottle in the air, he thinks he's ready, goes downstairs, still is strapped with several guns,
yeah,
out in the street, decides to take these huge guns off, hand them to Cogliostro, and then jump on a motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah,
okay, so I guess you're ready to take on hell. So but as I was saying, my favorite part, one of my favorite,
guns,
most memorable
where we're
part,
going, we don't need
guns. We don't
guns.
Need guns. Yeah. Or a helmet. Yeah. He's already dead, man. I'm arguing with myself. That motorcycle scene when he actually puts the cape, forms this cocoon around the motorcycle, I will always remember that as one of the coolest scenes. Except the fact that he like literally slid on the goo and like that didn't look very cool.
Yeah.
And then he does this like spiky thing where he like drops it down and he creates like this like spike where for some reason the Violator just decides to keep driving his truck right into this giant cape spike.
Yep. He didn't see it. He was camouflaged.
Oopsie.
But he's fast enough to like go boop, boop, boop and like, you know, teleport to the back of the truck. He's driving back of the truck, shooting a grenade launcher in front of the truck. Boop, boop. He's popping all over the place. The clown. You tell me he can do that? And then he flies off like Team Rocket.
Yeah, if I could have a chance to redo that motorcycle scene, I would want it to be more like the car chase scene in the Batman, but have Spawn like flying with his cape.
Oh yeah, I would say make it like Terminator 2.
Or that, you know? Yeah, yeah.
That through the canal, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, have you heard that they're doing a remake with Jamie Foxx?
Yeah,
I mean,
I might have. I've heard that, but I've also been hearing that since, like, 2018.
Has it been that long?
I mean, that's like, I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, the thing I came across was more current than 2018.
Well, every update I've ever seen is like, oh, yeah, these new people are gonna take another pass at the script.
Oh?
Like,
March 24th, 2023, I'm looking online right now. That was 2 days ago. Spawn's upcoming movie has a brand new update from Todd McFarlane. The creator says this Spawn will be a bigger budget movie with A-list talent attached. So, yeah, looks like it is going forward.
Huh. So maybe they need to listen to this episode and then take another pass over the script. See where they their shortcomings were in the original one.
Agreed.
You know, and one of the places that there was a shortcoming was definitely in the product placements. Why don't I talk about it a bit in Sponsorship Corner? I was struggling. I was struggling to get this one out. So always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week's Spawn is brought to you by not very much USA Today, Lexus, Coca-Cola, TDK CDs, and the Omni Hotel. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, the kid is drinking a Coke in the alley. And they every time they go to like the computer to steal information and that kind of stuff, they make sure that we get those TDK CDs shown really, really tightly.
Also brought to you by Wonder Bread. It can be moldy, but still edible. That's good food, boy.
Oh, the kid. We don't. Yeah, there's the whole kid storyline with the abusive dad, but Spawn can't kill him because the kid loves his dad. So, I don't know. How do you feel about the kid?
This is one where I thought they should have taken a cue from Dick Tracy and just had the kid leave with Spawn and be his little lackey, and then maybe Al adopts him at the end.
Spawn Junior,
Spawn Junior, Spawn Boy,
yeah. Al Simmons Junior. Yeah.
At first, I thought it was the same kid.
When do we eat?
When do we? Here's a rotten sandwich. When do we eat? It's good food. It's good food, boy.
So he takes off in the motorcycle to save Wanda. And so we get the showdown in the house. And see, Jason, or, you know, like Martin Sheen, he ends up getting lit on fire. And he knows how to stop, drop, and roll. So come on, Al Simmons. You didn't have to burn so much. Man, could have gotten out of there. Oh, but boy, that the fight in hell is just so hard to watch. Like you said earlier, like if you have sensitivities to epilepsy or like, you know, like strobe effects, whew, it was hard to watch. Very hard to watch. Yeah, it was like I was watching a 3D movie, but I had forgotten to put on the 3D glasses.
Like, very true. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
It was so much like the landscapes were all thrown off. Like he was at one point he was thrown against a rock and then he stands up and then, you know, you got flames running everywhere. And then at one point he just starts like shooting out green lasers and glowing and like killing all the other Hellspawn. Just
that's the disco scene. That's when the bass should have dropped and they should have brought in Block Rock and Beats again.
Well, that's what I was going to, again, the stakes aren't created, but to me, was that like him receiving his like heavenly powers? Like,
I don't know. It's like,
I didn't get it.
It didn't make any sense. Like he literally just, you know, started like exploding like hell spawns in hell, which seems like it should be kind of impossible. I don't know. That whole part just did not make sense. It's like, okay, we need to get rid of Hell's Army. Spawn lasers explode. He's good. And then he just like somehow creates rocket boots and takes himself and Cagliostro out of hell.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you keep listing off more and more special powers that this guy has. Yeah. So,
well, it's almost as if
rocket boot powers.
Yeah. It's almost as if they just come out of nowhere to like in the moment, like,
yeah, it's almost like they are a literary device.
Interesting.
That is needed at this moment
in Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Interesting. and then he kills. He does kill the Violator by finally using his chains to turn into like a chainsaw type thing to cut his head off, which I thought killed spawns or demons or something, but apparently they don't, because the Violator will be back.
Well, yeah, and I mean, my favorite trope, of course, the last minute bad guy pop up. I mean, we had to make sure that we got that.
Oh yeah,
right, yeah. So, will the Violator be back though? Because I don't think he was back.
Mm-mm. Nobody was. There was no sequel.
No sequels. See, that is one of the big shames with this reboot is the fact that it can't be understated how amazing John Leguizamo is in this movie. And you know, to think about someone else taking on the clown. I mean, this debate comes up every time they recast Joker, but it's like, you know, who could possibly fill the shoes of this character after the performance that we got from him?
Nobody. There's nobody that could do a better clown than John Leguizamo. Nobody.
Let's see.
Colin chuckled like he had an idea.
I gotta think. Jonah Hill. Throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Valid.
Yeah. But would they have to, like, would they do the same sort of thing where they put him inside a suit, or would they just, like, wheel him around in a green balloon and put in the body?
They probably CGI him, put him in the green suit with the little dots all over him.
Yeah. You know who I would love to see play the clown? Bill Burr. That's my suggestion. That's Bill my Burr. Selection.
Oh my god, that's another great one.
Yeah. See, I mean, I still stand behind Colin's my, on Danny it tonight. My Danny DeVito comment earlier.
Yeah, he would be good too. Yeah. I think
especially now that he's like old Always Sunny Danny DeVito. Yeah, when you get to season 15, Always Sunny Danny DeVito, you know, he's definitely getting older.
Yeah, Rumham Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Oh, did you know? So a couple of goofs that I'm looking at right now is like all this, the warning signs in the North Korean facility were in English.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course they were. They don't want any of the North Koreans that may be like going against the motherland to know what is actually there, but they've trained the factory workers to speak English so that they know what not to touch. It's a trick. It's a trick for Americans that may sneak into North Korea.
Oh yeah. So, in the beginning, his mission is supposed to be in Hong Kong. It's at LAX.
Okay.
So
right that's... on. Yeah. That's close. It's just over the, you know, just over the water from there. You know, it's like a river.
I think that might be all I can see for right now. After pre-shoot Spawn at the party, he runs down the corner and into the kitchen, stumbling to the ground as his wounds heals. When he lands on the ground, sneaker bottoms can be seen sticking a good 2 inches out of the bottom of Spawn's shoes.
Oh, and we never brought up when his wounds heal, and damn.
Yeah, damn.
Yeah.
Well, did we bring up when the belt stops him from getting kicked in the nuts?
Oh,
yeah. That's probably the funniest part of the movie, I think.
Yeah. She just screams. Well, like his little octopus hands when he's like climbing up the wall. And he's
Well, and like the camouflage bit where he turns into a part of the building. I mean, that's kind of a cool moment.
That was
too,
pretty cool. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
But yeah, and then after he decapitates the clown and we get to the end, I find it's impressive that they committed to the like the weird Fincher-esque quality that they've been going for with some of the stuff in this movie by committing to the weird credits that are like, you know, like stuttering and, you know, like slanted and everything like that. Weird off color. Like they committed to it right to the end of this movie.
This movie should be covered. Like the case of this movie should be covered in epilepsy warnings.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think, Aaron, you said something about the hell reminds you like it was made on PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I thought of when I was like, there's so many weird wipes and blends from scene to scene that it reminds me of like when a grade 9 student gets a hold of PowerPoint for the first time and is like, oh, let's do the dissolving wipe. Star wipe. Like, it's just everything.
Exactly. That's perfect.
You know, but like Star Wars has made a career out of that, right?
Oh, the wipe, just the dead wipe.
Yeah, it's not a Star Wars movie unless there's like, you know, various kinds of wipes across
the screen.
That's so true. That's the look.
One of like the funniest things that Michael Jai White said in this interview I watched of him, like he just seemed overly pissed off about this movie. He was like, oh, you know, the movie came out like 27 years ago at that time. And he was like, I've never said a good thing about it. And then he was talking about the original cut he saw that had more like depth of the story and more plot and that kind of stuff. But he was
more sense Okay.
Yeah, he was saying that he was saying that the original cut that he saw of this movie and enjoyed only had 70 effects, and the theatrical release has something like 400. Jeez. And because basically, like, these got like the Spaz or whatever. That's not the dog, but the guy who the VFX guy and the director were super big into. I wonder if it is actually. I never put that together. But they were super,
well, it is
super
the special
into...
effects movie event of the year, so no wonder it has so many.
Yeah, and even when you mentioned that tagline, I was like, oh yeah, like clearly somebody just had the idea that, you know, this is going to be a VFX spectacle.
Yep. Yeah, it sure was.
It also gave me mad Mortal Kombat vibes. I don't know if any of you got that, but like,
absolutely. Absolutely.
To the point that there's a point in the final battle in Hell where, I think it's like when Malbolgia like tells Spawn that he's gonna lead the army, and Spawn's like, "Never!" And it sounds exactly like the Scorpion sting from like the video game. Like, it's crazy.
Get over here! Yes, I'll lead your army. Anything to get back to Wanda.
Yeah.
Right on. Oh, well, there we go. That is Spawn. Now, Colin, Aaron, on IMDb, it scored 5.2 out of 10 and has a Metascore of, this is where it plummets, 34. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 17% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 36%. But Colin, like, it's only IMDb that they liked it, I guess. But Colin, mildly. Those are just numbers. Like your belt blocking a kick to the nuts. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, an unknown Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer gave the movie 1.5 out of 5 stars and says, "This film is a lot like the Punisher film, serviceable but not a patch on the source material. The film is shot like a cheap TV movie with experimental special effects. Some of the good atmospheric shots are done by some terrible special effects in Hell and bad screenwriting. The only thing I remembered about this film was the soundtrack, and I give that 5 out of 5. The director clearly has more of an eye for the city visuals than the overall product. There is a good film here, but you would almost need to reshoot half the movie to flush it out. The plot is far from interesting, and we're left with a poor Spawn adaptation."
I wonder which Punisher movie they're referring to. Thomas Jane or Dolph Lundgren?
Or Warzone.
Or Warzone, I was going to say. Hopefully Tom Jane. Curtis Doucette says 2 out of 5 stars. "My first thought with Spawn was how terrible the acting is. My second thought was how high the budget the film appears to be. You can tell a lot of money was spent, but everything misses the mark. The CGI looks utterly horrible, which makes the other reviews make more sense as the 4 to 5 stars are based on nostalgia. I managed to finish the movie, but it wasn't easy."
Oh, ouch. Coming in mean at the end there. Yeah, I complimented John Leguizamo quite a bit. Like, you know, this guy said that the acting wasn't very good, but he was amazing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Martin Sheen definitely made a meal out of it. Like, he went a little too far the opposite direction.
Xavery says 5 out of 5 stars, "Weird, but actually a good movie. I've heard of it and decided to watch it. Also, the diversity and position of people in power being so broad really threw me for a loop. It does have a Matrix vibe, hard to describe. It's worth one watch for sure by yourself and once with friends. Might not work as a makeout movie because there are moments that really draw you in."
I like that guy. I like that one.
Yeah. It's a good bar
review.
To set for your for whether you're gonna like a movie.
Yeah,
it's not a good makeout movie.
There's a review on IMDb that I really like, and I just because of the title of it, and it says Spawn's powers do not include aging well.
Wow. That one's great. That one is fantastic. Aaron, I saw you nodding along when he brought up the Matrix. Do you agree that there's a Matrix-like quality?
There is a vibe to it. There is that, like, because it automatically, like, when I think about the credits and some of the other like action, like even the motorcycle scene, it draws me back into the scene where Neo goes to the club for the first time, and you're hearing the Rob Zombie sound song, and it's like, they're the witches, so it's like, you know, it does have that like grunge, you know, metal whatever you call it, like, vibe to it. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, Neo uses PowerPoint. This one movie was filmed, you know, they're scene making PowerPoint. Anyway.
Every time someone fights, a demon gets its wings. There's twins.
Dr. Espionage 45 gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars.
A favorite as a kid and still the best
superhero movie, I think. His suit, cape, and all its powers are the coolest of all heroes by far. When he first changes into the Spawn and you see the suit, was so awesome when I first watched it. Michael Jai White is the man and one of the best martial artists out there, even though there isn't much in this film. Plus, John Leguizamo as the clown or violator is hilarious. I've seen this movie a bunch of times, but I just watched it again and it's still dope as hell. Good storyline, CGI and special effects really good for the time it was made. Some people say the devil character, Malbolgia, looks whack, but it's more or less how it was in the comics, but the whole movie is worth the watch for sure. I'll take Spawn over the Avengers, Batman, and any superhero any day. Last one. Luke Gent says 5 out of 5 stars. I'm in absolute love with this movie. Playing Mortal Kombat 11 on my Xbox One, and I wanted to play this character badly and knew that I had to. Then, not long after, I noticed that there was a movie, and I thought, oh yes, I have got to get this. And do you know what? I really enjoyed this. 5 stars all the way and 10 out of 10. And ever since I bought this on DVD and seen the trailer, I got so excited to watch this. And do you know what? This did not disappoint me, not one bit. And I thought some of the moments were really funny, too. This person needs to learn what a comma is. But, yeah.
You know, all these Mortal Kombat comparisons, you know, it makes me think that the scenes in Hell actually kind of look like the graphics for the original Mortal Kombat. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way all the spawns are in the background. They Which look is like funny. Johnny Cage going back.
And oh, yeah, yeah, because that's what I always imagine, like, the people in the back or in the game, the spectators. That's what you have the spawn, the Hell spawns are.
The weird ghostly silhouettes. Yeah.
Funny thing is, Michael Jai White actually played Jax, Sergeant Jackson Briggs. Yeah, in Mortal Kombat. Not the movie, but, like, I want to say Mortal Kombat Legacy?
Legacy, yeah. The independently produced, like, miniseries.
Yeah.
Right on. So yeah, 5.2 is the high score, but 34 and 36 and 17. Wow, just all over the board. Just like the movie itself. Aaron, on this viewing of Spawn, what did you think?
Again, I'm a fan of it, so anytime it comes on, it's enjoyable to watch, so I'll sit down and watch it. And it was when you said, hey Aaron, do you want to come on the show and talk about Spawn again, I jumped at it, because I do love this movie. It's yeah. I don't know if I'd call it a guilty pleasure, but I love watching it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean if you think of, again, the comparisons to Mortal Kombat that we've made, I mean I know for Colin, that's how he felt about Mortal Kombat. So I totally get the vibe of guilty pleasure movie. Yeah, I mean, for me, this one just doesn't make enough sense for it to be a guilty pleasure movie for me. Like, if I'm going to sit down and watch a superhero movie, there is a long line of superhero movies that I would probably choose before this one and have many times chosen before this one. I still, even on this viewing, personally feel like Spawn was kind of done dirty with what could have been done with this movie.
True.
Like, there is potential to this movie. And, I mean, you pointed out a few more, like, gaping problems with this movie that I hadn't even thought of on my own, such as the fact that, hey, I've got your girlfriend. Hey, now is a good time for a training montage. You know, like, it just... I really still stand firm on the fact that I did love this comic when I was younger, and the fact that they didn't take the opportunity to lean into the mystery of who Spawn is with this movie. You know, if you're going to give us a Fincher-esque opening, or, you know, like the weird, you know, like, subliminal message credits that you've got going where you show moments of horror that and all that sort of thing, and Martin Sheen's face. but if you're going to do that kind of thing, it's like, well, then, you know, mess with the narrative a little bit. You know, don't make it so linear.
Take some chances.
Take some chances. Yeah, bounce a little. So I would have preferred the learning who I am storyline. I would have preferred Spawn Crow Edition over, you know, Spawn trying to be told like it's Batman, but it's not Batman. Batman with this terrible clown. Colin, on this viewing, what did you think of Spawn?
Well, I'm happy to say that I'm not scared of it anymore. So that's a positive.
Yay, that's a win.
So I watched this movie 3 times to prepare for this podcast, and I would say on the first time, I hated it. The second time, okay, I still hated it, but for some reason on the third time, I was like, yeah, it's not so bad. Like, it's pretty good.
So maybe I need to watch it 2 more times.
So I think it falls for me firmly in the category of it's enjoyable, but there's a better movie here, and that makes it frustrating to watch.
There you go. You summed up what I couldn't properly articulate a moment ago.
Hit the nail on the head.
I think that's exactly what it was. Yes, there is a better movie here. Yeah, 100%.
And I think part of me admires wanting to go like comic accurate with like Malbolgia, let's say.
And Clown.
And Clown. But I mean, Clown, they did like good practical. But I feel like for Malbolgia, if they weren't going to go practical, I would have loved to see. I would have almost preferred them have like the devil in human form in some like dark office that he keeps going back and forth from. And then maybe towards the end, we get to see him in like his actual form in a practical way. But
like Super Mario?
Yeah, sure. Like Super Mario. But yeah, I think those hell scenes were just so awful.
They were
so awful
watch.
That I'm
so
like, I don't know how, I don't know how they made that and thought, yeah, this we could put, we'll throw this out. We'll put that out there for people to watch. Like,
they were just really tired after doing Jurassic Park. Okay.
Yeah. And I guess that's why the point is like, I like, I don't know. I was thinking maybe it's because I was listening to your Quantumania episode and disagreeing with you the entire time. But
wow, I feel attacked.
I'm sorry. It's nothing but love. It's good. But sometimes I watch like the new Marvel movies, and I'm just it's like my eyes can see through the CGI more and more, to the point where I'm like, no, like everything is just, it all has this weird fake sheen on it. And I sometimes wish they would put in more practical stuff. And I like this podcast because then we go back, we watch movies from the 80s and 90s where you're like, oh, like they didn't have the CGI capabilities, so they were forced to like do things of a more practical nature. And you're always like surprised. Like, what was we just watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And I'm like shocked at how well these practical effects and models and stuff still look on the screen. And I wish they jumped the gun a little bit too much on the CGI, I think is what I'm trying to say here with Spawn.
If you ever want a very big wake-up call when it comes to like CGI and how silly shit will look with practical versus CGI, you should look up Sweeted movies. If you've ever heard of the trends like Sweeted or something, somebody Sweeting a movie?
Mm-mm.
So it's, you know, it's like Swedish, but it's Sweeted. Okay. So there's like people that do this, you know, like I'm not even gonna say like professionally, but like semi-professionally, where they take like a movie like Tron or The Matrix, and they basically do what they Swede it, which means they do the entire movie, or at least like a really quick cut of it, using only household items and effects.
Oh. Okay.
So if you can imagine like the light cycle scene in the original Tron movies, just imagine cardboard and cellophane.
Okay.
And it's amazing. It is amazing. I'm telling you.
I'm doing this.
Look it up.
When you said Sweden, I mean, I was thinking bored.
No, not the chef. not Muppet Chef, the Swedish chef.
Too much salt.
No, it's, yeah, they do like the movies with like So there's a movie a few years ago with Jack Black, and I want to say
it's a Be Kind Rewind, like the one with like
So that's where the trend Sweden came from. Basically, what they that movie was inspired by. Oh, actually, I think that movie was inspired by people Sweden stuff. So what they did was Sweden.
Okay. Would that be like similar to how Adam Goldberg. All those people did the like those celebrities all did that recreation of the Princess Bride over the pandemic?
Oh, Princess Bride at Home.
Where they, like, probably. It. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I'm definitely checking. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's amazing what they've done with some of those, and it's like, you know, you think about like practical effects, what people can do at home. It's pretty amazing, you know, some of the stuff that they come up with. But just imagine like that, and then the actual movie, and it's like, okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, but and with what you said, like what Colin said about like feeling the just the flatness that's kind of starting to come out in Marvel movies. I mean, you take a look at something like Loki, where there is the one episode of the series where they actually built the city. You know, when they're stuck in the apocalypse and they actually built the city. And in that one, it's like, okay, you feel the actual set.
The depth.
Whereas,
yeah.
like, most other Marvel, it's like, oh, no, you really don't feel it, especially when it comes to some, you know, some of these things like Quantumania.
Well, and that's also depending on, like, those movies are now being made to draw. I mean, they were, and they continue to be made to draw you into a theater setting to where you can watch this massive scale scene. Again, with the MCU going into a cosmic phase, you really have to see these at on a big screen.
Yeah,
where if you're watching them at home, generally you don't – I mean, not everybody has access to a 75, 85-inch TV. So you're watching it on a 65, 45, 55, and it just doesn't – you don't feel the depth that it was meant to, because that's the technology that they're using. They're using technology that is meant to be displayed on a massive screen. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, you go back and now, like, let's say you put Spawn in it. Okay. Best thing I can tell you is like Jurassic Park. If you go to the theater, I saw Jurassic Park on its, I want to say its 25th anniversary. I saw it on the big screen.
Yeah, I saw one of those too.
Phenomenal. That aged so well. You put Spawn on a big screen.
I'm
now
gonna have a seizure.
It looks. It's gonna look. Yeah, you're gonna have a seizure. It's gonna look terrible. But that's because, again, probably budget. Probably who was behind it. Who was backing it. You know, so there's a lot of differences there, and unfortunately, movies like Spawn don't age well because they just don't translate to HD quality on a bigger screen nowadays, which is what everybody kind of has.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, if they are making a Spawn remake, I feel like Spawn would make a better TV show than a movie. I think, especially like nowadays with like the budget, like I could see that being like a good Netflix series or something like that. Like it just seems, but the character just seems like it would be, it needs more time to like unfold. I don't know that you could do it good in 2 hours.
Well, so it needs time to
Ghost Rider aspect.
Simmer, you know?
Simmer, yes.
Al simmer.
It needs to Al simmer on low heat for 10 minutes.
And there we go. That is Spawn, and that's our show for the week. Oh, boy. A huge thank you to our pal over at the Oblivion Bar, Mr. Aaron Knowles. Aaron, shout out all your shit.
All right. Well, pretty much you guys can find us. Me and my co-host, Chris Hacker, we're on the Oblivion Bar podcast. We're at the at Oblivion Bar Pod on pretty much every social media platform. We're on all the different if you have your preferred podcasting platform, we're there, so check us out. We also have a Patreon show called The Grid, which we release every week. It's kind of like the Oblivion Bar podcast, but you know, unformatted, unleashed. It's
Oblivion Bar After Dark.
Yeah, After Dark. Yes, exactly. Where we get to be a little bit more looser and have a little bit more fun and just talk about random shit. So, but I want to say thank you to Sean. Thank you to Colin. I appreciate you guys having me. It truly is like so much fun to come and hang out and talk to you guys. I feel like I've discovered new friends, you know, every time we talk. And even though you don't agree with me, Colin, I forgive you, man. And I still love you.
No, man. Yeah. I threw a little bit of shade, but I love your podcast. I love that you and Chris are Tron Legacy apologists, because I also love that movie. And,
hey, you have to be able to argue with friends too.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
For some
you don't
reason,
want to be surrounded by a bunch of yes men.
The first episode of your guys' podcast I listened to is your like where you went through all phases of the Marvel, that like 2-hour one, and it was unreal. It was so good.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I feel like with you guys. Like, I feel like I'm just kind of coming into a friendship, and that's the cool thing about, you know, Chris and I is, you know, we've been friends for over 12 years, and it's just two buddies. Like, that's why I compare your guys' show, is you guys are two friends, two buddies just talking about movies that you love. And it's the same thing with Chris and I. We're just two friends that talk about shit that we love. And sometimes it gets ridiculous, and sometimes we do get a little heated at each other, but most of the time, the rest of the time, it's always a good time.
It's a good excuse to just chat with a buddy for a
couple exactly
hours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think you even plugged your own personal shit.
Oh,
your charity shit.
It's not about me, but I will do it. Thank you. Yes. So I run a nonprofit called Shred the Stress. It's at Shred the Stress on pretty much all social media platforms. We got a couple of GoFundMes going right now that have been going for a little while. We're trying to raise money. Basically, Shred the Stress is we show and teach soldiers, service members, and veterans how to ride electric skateboards, scooters, and just get out of their own head and, again, shred some stress and gain some relief. We're trying to lower the suicide statistics within the military community. But, yeah, you can check us out on all social media platforms. I got invited to an event that's coming up in April. For where I'm stationed at Fort Campbell in Kentucky, and then I actually just did one at my own unit with all the chaplains of my unit to show them how to ride so that they can bring in their young soldiers and help, you know, spread the word.
That's awesome.
Nice. Right on. Well, if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just, you know, go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and like and subscribe, and while you're over there, give us a review. You know, it doesn't matter what you say. You could say, hey, these guys are telling me I have to do this, or they're going to murder my dog. Or, you know, whatever you want to say, just go and give us some love. It just helps drive us up the charts, helps those algorithms do their job and get us noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond and become a patron of this show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon community. Become an executive producer and get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And go to our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at iuselikethisone@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One. It's created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Nice.
Let me stop that recording.
Yeah, I think part of my problem right now is, like, again, when I started torrenting, I think I had this vision, like, I could actually catch up to all the good TV that existed at the time.
No.
But now it's just too much. Like,
yeah.
I feel like if you miss something, like, for me, it's Stranger Things. Like, I watched Stranger Things season one, and then between season one and two, too many other good things came around that I just never made my way back to it, and now it's just the train has left the station. I feel
Stranger
like
Things is a perfect example. Game of Thrones is one for me. I've still never watched Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, I was on top of.
I finally, like, not necessarily binged, but I finally made. I think I had like a week or 2 weeks to go through all of Game of Thrones. And the sad thing is, I've watched all of it now, every single bit of it, except for the last episode, the final episode. I still have not watched. It's the same with it's same with Halo. I was so excited, but then I was watching Halo, and Halo was kind of a fucking terrible show. And so, I got no rush to see the final episode because I know it's going to be disappointing.
Yeah. But like all this shit that's coming back to, like Dexter.
Yeah.
I loved Dexter back in the day, and
Dexter burned me bad. That last season of Dexter was such garbage.
And
that
I haven't watched Final Cut. I haven't gone back to watch the new series. Or New Blood. Is it New Blood? Maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
New Blood, I think. I definitely, like, I watched that 90s show the day it came out.
Yeah.
I was super psyched for that.
And it was so bad.
I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Oh,
Well, it's like How I Met Your Mother, and then How I Met Your Father is just a fucking train wreck.
It is. It is. It's dumpster fire and a train wreck. It's there, someone left a flaming dumpster on the train tracks. That's what caused.
And then they backed the train up to it, attached it, and it, as it's going through the
just
city, it's
scattered.
It's slowly
flaming debris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty much like that scene in Batman Begins with the fucking machine that's like, you know, like destroying all the water mains around the city as it's traveling through.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like. I'm not going to say How I Met Your Father is a great show, but I do feel like they handicapped themselves by calling it that. I think it would have been better if they just gave it a different name, and because it's like...
Like Fuller House?
Like it just went from being like, I don't know. There's just a difference between like relationships from a guy's perspective and relationships from a girl's perspective. Yeah. And I feel like that show is kind of like, it's too chick for me sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, that's fair. That is fair. But I mean, it's like it's so inclusive now, though. I like how all these like retro made shows are now like showing full diversity. When it's like, I don't know, that's an awfully diverse 1980 that you're showing right there. You know, I don't remember better, but you know, I've always gotten, you know, in that 70s show. Fez was the token person of color. He was he was as brown as they were going to get.
But the joke
show.
Was that we just have no idea where the fuck he's from, which is funny because it didn't matter.
Like Balky Bartokomus. I mean,
yeah,
you could have made up a place that Fez is from. Meepos, the island of Meepos.
Yeah, Fez was foreign exchange student, from all I know.
Oh, yeah, right. I guess it was.
Yeah, that is true. We don't ever actually know what his real name is.
Still don't. With that 90s show. I mean, I did watch a couple episodes, but it didn't suck me in. Anywho, Spawn.
Yes.
Right on. August 1st, 1997 is the date that I have, Colin.
Alrighty.
And I am recording everywhere.
Oh, yeah, I need to record, right?
Yeah, if you could. Sorry.
Oh, my bad. I totally forgot.
Alright.